right, you're live in the arms of Glenn.
And John.
And,
but you're not actually live.
We're not. Oh, yeah, we're not
live. Because we're coming to you.
From the
past.
No. In the present.
Yeah, in the present.
From the past.
From the past. In our future.
In our future.
Past of the present of the future.
You know, we've been doing this show for a long time. John, I don't know if we've ever actually said that the same way twice.
Sure we have.
Have we?
It's the past of the present and the future. I've got it.
Oh, okay.
That's why you always look to
that's
me
why
for
I always look to you.
Because
I look
you're
to
like,
you for your guidance, sir.
Right.
Good job.
You know, kind of how I did at you with the last show, and you asked me a stupid, simple math question. And I was like...
like, so how many is 2 mils? And you were like...
It was
Kentucky! And I was like, not
it
Kentucky.
It was MOA.
Kentucky is not the answer.
Yeah.
That's right, it was during MOA. Yeah, mils, you were totally lost.
Yeah, I was like, all right, nope, keep that shit away from me.
I always love, by the way, when we're in class and we're doing that stuff, like I've got the little whiteboard thing up, you know, which is usually like a piece of paper or whatever, and we're going through it, and I'm like, all right, everyone got this? And they're like, yes! And I'm like, all right, and then I throw out a math question, and there'll be like engineers, doctors, like, you know, IT guys, construction workers, like, well, we have such a variety, right? It was like these guys who like use math, and they just stare at me like I got a dick growing out of my forehead, you know? I'm like, dude, stay with me on this math.
What are we talking about?
Because it's all about application, right? Like, everything is contextual.
Yep.
You know, like, I can throw my dad math questions all day long, and he's super good at it. You know, he's doing contracting and working with numbers all the freaking time. He's just really super fast at it. But then sometimes I'll give him some, like, off, like, weird math, you know? And it takes him a second
to
do
it. Contextualized to what he grew up doing.
And I watched the dude like
hey dad, how many board feet of lumber does it take to roof a 10 by 20 shed?
Yeah, and he'll stare at the sky for like 5 seconds and he'll be like 467.
You know, yeah, exactly.
That's even possible, you know?
Yeah.
But he's good now. Like, he does algebraic equations now in his head because of all the water flow stuff since he's working as a water commissioner.
Yeah.
And he'll be like, oh, that's like 26 cubic foot or whatever of water
CFM
coming down. I'm like, what? That's even possible, but he does it.
I tried to do long division in my head the other day on some like not standard stuff, like bigger numbers, and I was and I'm like drawing it out in the air, and I can't even figure it out.
I'm actually like not real, too bad at math in my head typically.
Basic math I'm okay with. Long division I'm a little rusty with because I haven't done it in a really long time.
Yeah,
but the oldest boy is starting to get to that in math and fractions and stuff.
That's the worst, though, is when you have to learn how they're learning. Because I've done that with my kids, and I'm like, I can't do this. I'm sorry. I know math, but I can't help you with this.
I don't know the way you're learning.
I don't know how.
I don't know what
this
Common Core is. It's ridiculous.
So
that's
I can explain Common Core real easy.
Garbage.
This is the easiest way in the world I have found to explain Common Core.
There you go.
It is teaching them how to do math on paper the same way we all do math in our heads.
Yeah, but that's not the like I that's the problem though, is that's not the way I do math in my head.
It is. But you've never thought about how you do math in your head because when we learned it, we just learned it through fucking constant application.
Propaganda. I think you're a loyalist, John.
Yeah.
No, I hate Common Core.
Even Bill Gates admitted that his Common Core program was a failure.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea. But I had to figure it out, and by looking at some of the more basic stuff, it started to make sense after a while, even though it still didn't make any sense. So it's like everything that's done in the military, if you don't think about it, it makes total sense.
Sure. So it makes total sense as long as you don't think about it?
Yep.
There's that. There's that. So we are AR500 Armor Studio. Thank you to all of our patrons for being a part of the show. Remember to check out the show reviews and blogs and all that kind of stuff that we put up there, the extra shows, which I think we did a really good one on this last one. We talked about apathy.
Yeah,
it was a good show. Oh. And so, James is deep over there, man. He's feeling kind of sick the last couple of days, so he's maybe not as deep as he normally is.
Yeah, I'm not balls deep today.
Dude's pretty deep normally. So remember to take advantage of all those extra benefits as a patron. And don't forget to send us your show ideas, man. It's like your show ideas as our patrons and our listeners are the things that keep us going. It's why we do the shows that we do, like why we're doing the show today. So make sure that you guys are, you know, sending us your show ideas. We don't get a lot of them. So it's just a pretty damn good chance if you send in your show idea, we're probably going to talk about it.
Yep. It's a true story.
It's a pretty good chance. So there you go. Otherwise, we just come up with whatever the hell we want to talk about. So there's that. We totally screwed up and missed
a massive news story.
A massive news story earlier today, which was last week.
Yep.
And that was about the Florida shooting
UPS
on the UPS truck, which was all the rage this weekend.
On the freeway.
On the freeway.
Using civilians as cover.
Where live, actual, real police officers, not in a movie, were using civilian vehicles as cover.
With civilians in them, by
the way. As civilians were trying to move out of the way, police officers were continuing to poorly, I will add, use their vehicles as cover. Not even effectively use them as cover.
Right.
They're hugged way up on top of it, no depth and angle. And then engaging into a UPS vehicle where there was a couple of shitty bad guys, killing the hostage in the process, Polish ambushing themselves, and several different civilians.
Yeah, I saw a great meme where someone actually laid out all
the lines of fire. Oh my, Polish ambush.
Yeah.
Like, what the... What?
Hey, you stand on that side, right? We're going to stand on this side, right? And now, when they come into the middle, goddamn, we're going to light them up.
We're going to shoot until we're out of ammo. We're out of
ammo. L-shape, you retards.
Yeah, y'all. There's a reason it's an L-shape. So y'all don't get shot by each other, yeah?
And then there's this real simple command when you close the L called lift fire, shift fire.
Yeah.
Not complicated shit.
I don't know what the letter L is because it ain't in US and A. All right?
You see, is there an L in the United States of America? No, there is not. But there is a Polish ambush.
There is a U. There is an L. And if you line the U and start shooting to the center,
yeah, there you go.
You guarantee to be shooting.
But there is a U. And in the U, if everyone goes on each side of the U, and then the guy comes up the bottom of the U, and then you trap him in the middle, you shoot at him, and if you shoot each other, well, you do. And if you shoot the civilians caught in the middle, well, you do that too. And then,
they shouldn't have been getting caught in hostage situations.
Yeah.
That's their fault.
That's
all their 100%. Fault. What were they doing there?
What were you doing getting caught?
It's a gunfight. Get out of here.
How dare you be delivering UPS packages?
As long as you're here, though, I'm going to use your vehicle for cover.
As long as you're here.
Just lay down in the floorboards. You'll be fine.
Quit trying to get away.
The best
trying to hide.
Is that civilian like crawling on the fucking sidewalk in the median, and the cop literally just grabs his belt and like moves him aside a little bit and keeps going.
Yeah.
Like the civilian is trying to get out
of
the fucking way.
Did you see the video where those guys drove past the UPS vehicle that was on the back of the wrecker?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
God. I think it was Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, I'm laughing because it's terrible.
Yeah, that really qual two times a year is really, really catching up to you.
Well, here's the other issue: there were multiple agencies involved,
mm-hmm.
and so now you have, when you have cross training, like you have no idea what the other guy's going to do, and when you have no baseline or a good baseline of those types of tactics, holy mackerel!
It's pretty bad.
That looked like what I imagine the Threepers would look like if they were trying to get after some Alphabet Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just as well organized.
Yeah. And about as efficient.
Yeah. Tactically sound.
That was some freaking banana. That was banana shit, man.
At least, hey, the upside is at least we know if we ever have to, fight the cops in the Boogaloo, we're probably going to win.
Just set up anything other than a Polish ambush.
Yeah.
Probably
we'll just
win.
Let them take care of it.
Events we have coming up that I think are important to talk about. We don't really pitch too much of independence training stuff on here, but we have the Out With A Bang alumni training assessment coming up on the 28th. We do an Out With A Bang event every year. Every year it's a little bit different. This year, alumni only, and it's going to be a hell of a good time assessing handgun and carbine skill sets along with some medical stuff, three different courses of fire led by three different instructors. A lot of fun. We're going to be assessing very specific skills and then rerunning that same exercise identically so that people can see, are we really improving? Am I learning these lessons? Am I getting a better time or achieving better accuracy? So it's just going to be kind of a fun way to, send the time out with a bang. And there may be, some fun shit that shows up. I don't know. We'll see.
There's a good chance.
You might get a chance to run one of the stages with a full auto gun or something, maybe. Maybe you should show up and find out whether or not we like to send that you're out with a bang. Maybe you should do that. But registration's up online, trainingaz.com. Check it out. All kinds of other good courses coming up, too, if you're looking for it. All right. Redwire gear moment and go.
So this week, this one actually ties directly into what we're going to be talking about as we move forward with the show. But something I started doing several years ago, and I've encouraged many of my friends to do as well, and I've also encouraged listeners to do and students to do, is keep a training journal. For all of your training, your shooting stuff, if you have a regular workout routine, If you do any type of combatives training, take the time to take some notes before, during, and after these things are happening, because there'll be some little thing that you're like, oh man, I didn't think about that. You know, and you're not going to remember it later because it occurred to you then as kind of an afterthought almost. But if you don't write it down, that's not your, it's value lost essentially. So keep a journal, fall back on your journal. If you didn't write it down, it didn't happen.
All right. Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by redwiregear.com. So our topic for this week is keeping skills current. How do we do it? How do we keep skills current?
Rote, application, and training. There it is, quick show.
There you go. Show's over. Some people have emailed us over the last, you know, several months. We've been looking for show ideas. This topic kind of kept coming up, which is like, well, you guys talk about this stuff a lot, but, you know, how do you do some of it? So the first thing that I'll say about it is this. It is literally a lifestyle and not a thing that I do.
Yep.
The lifestyle changes, adapts, and alters as needed when I see needs or I start slacking off or I need to change something or whatever it may be. But I wouldn't say, like, it's not just a thing that I do. 5 years from now, I can be doing something different. 10 years ago, I wasn't doing something different. I was doing things differently,
right,
but I wasn't doing different things. You know what I mean? If that makes sense. Like, I was still living like this. There's some different skills I've picked up that's added some different concepts or some different tools that I may get or whatever. But
there's concepts overall, that have been left by the wayside.
Yeah, there's stuff that's been like, I probably don't need that anymore, right? But along the way, I'm still basically doing the same stuff. Mm-hmm. And so how do we keep skills current? Most importantly, we find contextually realistic ways to apply them. Mm-hmm. So as an example, we'll use shooting. So competition is probably one of the best ways to apply your shooting skills without devolving too much into just having a competition-related show. Like, it is an application of the shooting part of the skill. When people are like, I don't like competitions because it teaches bad tactics. Well, yeah, you fucking idiot. You shouldn't be learning tactics from a competition unless you're learning competition tactics, which do exist. Mm-hmm. All right, then yes, you should be learning those. There's things I do in competition I wouldn't do in the real world. And some people are like, well, how are you going to make the distinction under stress? Well, because I know that when I'm doing a competition, I'm not building tactics for the real world. When I run into a room in a competition to shoot a bunch of targets, or I run into a room to, you know, engage bad guys, I'm going to approach those rooms two very different ways, even if I've recently completed a competition where I had to just blast right through a door and shoot stuff without, you know, getting depth and angle and, you know, seeing the room before I enter. Like, that is a stupid, retarded argument. And honestly, I think the people who say it are just too big of a pussy to go out and actually try a competition. That's like, at this point in my life, that's what I'm totally willing to say. I think most people who will just go like, it's just a game and I don't like to treat gunfights like, it's not a fucking gunfight. It's a competition. It's a shooting competition. It's not a tactics competition. It's not a gunfight competition. It's a shooting competition. You're basing the shooting skill. Not all the tactics, not all that other shooting skills. That's why you can be a big fat guy with shitty cardio and still win, because it's not a gunfight competition. It's a shooting competition. That person may be a better shooter than you are. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's okay if he beats you. Doesn't mean he would beat you in a gunfight. And understand what you're doing there. This is martial application of the skill. There are really none of our instructors that are, I would say, always better than everyone else in all competition, right? I'm going to beat Josh in some stuff. He's going to beat me in other stuff. I'm going to beat Jay in some stuff. He's going to beat me in other stuff, right? Whatever it is. Like, there's also no one on our team that I particularly like to get into a gunfight with.
No.
So even if I, let's say, beat Jason at a multi-gun competition, it doesn't mean I'm like, oh yeah, it's because I'm a better shooter than he is, so I'd get into a gunfight with him. No, there's nothing to do with the two things are not related. Shooting skills are important. Yes. So would I rather get in a gunfight with someone who's a really good shooter, or would I rather have them on my side? Of course. Mm-hmm. But if they don't know much about gunfighting or the tactics thereof, then we're probably not going to do very well. You know, if they can't take that shooting skill and apply it to violence or tactics or whatever, we're probably not going to make it, right? Regardless of how good of a shooter they are. So I think competition is a very important thing. in the application of shooting, which is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Dry practice is important.
Yes. Amazingly so. Because it's free. That's the best part about it. It's free and it doesn't take a lot of time. And I think people get wrapped around the axle of when they're, I mean, you're looking at any type of training or any type of skill set, they get used to this almost like a schoolhouse kind of mentality where, oh, well, if I don't spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours a day or 8 or 9 hours a week or whatever they're used to doing, if I don't spend that amount of time on that, it's not making me any better and it's kind of useless and pointless. When the exact opposite is true. If you can't devote 8 hours a week to a thing, right, but you can devote 5 minutes a day, so 20, 30 minutes, 35 minutes in a week, right? If you can devote that time to one thing and one thing only, because that's how I approach my dry practice, is it cycles through different skill sets, right? Like 1 week it's just drawing from a holster. Maybe the next week it's doing mag changes, you know? Maybe the next week it's just doing single round trigger press, right? But that 35 minutes is dedicated to that thing. Well, at the end of that week, if I've done it appropriately, I'm going to be better than I was when I started on Monday.
Well, it's a lot like when we're teaching students in classes about stuff, and we're teaching about dry practice, and we're like, look, if you spend 5 minutes today, this week, that's 5 minutes more than you spent last week, you're going to see improvement.
Yeah, incremental change.
You're consistent going to see improvement, especially change. When, like, when people go, well, how are you keeping your skills relevant, right, which is kind of the – or current, I mean, which is kind of what we're doing. This is that idea of keeping it current, even if I can't hit the range.
Yeah.
So I can still build my muscular response, my nervous capability, or not nervous, but my nerve capabilities to have that reflexive response to do whatever it is, draw a pistol, move, shoot, acquire my sights while I press the trigger, whatever it is, I can do that dry. It's free.
Yep.
It doesn't take very long. And I can, if I do it for just a couple minutes, it's going to help me. It's going to help me.
Yeah.
And when you find out, when you talk to people who are really successful shooters, one of the number one things they all do is dry practice.
It's weird.
Shocker. Might want to pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
Another part of this shooting thing is physical fitness. And physical fitness can quickly become something that we can apply to everything when I'm saying, how do I keep my skills current? I don't care what your physical fitness routine is. It's irrelevant. We've had a show about physical fitness. We have We did an extra show a couple months ago with James about physical fitness. Like, we've talked plenty about physical fitness, enough to say and enough in our classes to say everybody pretty much knows we're into it. It's not that all of us are pinnacles of human performance. That's not what we're after. We're looking for that functional fitness capability, right? We want to be physically capable of doing the things that we want to do. That's going to go from shooting to everything else.
Literally everything in your life.
Everything that you that you do, right? There was the Fit Fellas thing. I can say that on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Fit Fellas feel, fight, and fuck fantastically.
Yeah.
Right? That's the idea. I mean, that covers kind of not just those three things that we're concerned about, but it's like that covers and says, look, if you're fit,
there's no aspect of your life that's not better.
You're going to be better in everything. None. You're going to feel better.
Yep.
You're going to have more energy.
Yep.
You're going to take, you know, you're going to shoot better. You're going to run better. You're going to lift heavy things better. You're going to type on your computer better. You're going to write your notes better. Whatever it is you do physically, right? You're going to lift up heavy things and put them back down better. You're going to drive nails better. You're going to fly that airplane better. Whatever it is, if you're physically fit,
typically speaking,
everything in your life is going to be improved by that. Definitely not so the other way. If you're less physically fit, there's nothing really in your life that's improved. Some people are like, well, I don't have to go to the gym. Well, that's great. You don't have to go to the gym anyway. Mm-hmm. You can be functionally fit without a gym.
Yeah.
You know? It's, again, not going to turn us into a fitness show, but like...
We could do several shows on this, like a whole series of shows.
Easily, physical fitness is going to help you keep the majority of your skills current.
Yep.
The mentality that you have about the whole thing. Like, one of the things I'm always telling our instructors is depth and breadth of knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. It's a constant thing. You guys all heard me say it already. Depth and breadth of knowledge. Like, you have to be able to walk into a class and go, to me, this is part of what makes a good instructor. I can walk into a class and go, I don't care what kind of pistol they have, what kind of rifle they have, what their application is or whatever. If I haven't done it, seen it, shot it, participated in it, then I've studied it, researched it, been a part of it, or someone on our team has, and they can add their relevant experience. Like, we want to have in my field, this is my field, this industry is my field. I want to have an amazing amount of breadth and depth of knowledge where I can sit here and talk about, like we did last show, precision rifle, just as easily as, you know, next week we're going to talk about training and teaching, you know, foreign nationals. Or, you know, or we can sit here and talk about medicine. Or we can sit here and talk about raising kids. Or we can sit here and talk about, you know, working on your car, maintaining your vehicle. Like, have a breadth and depth of knowledge. And since we're talking about shooting specifically, then that breadth and depth of knowledge should be more than just the thing you do.
Yeah.
Right? If you're trying to improve or keep your skills current, then that would mean current meaning modern or up to date. And part of that issue that we run into in our industry is guys who have served in a uniform of some type, whether that was military or law enforcement.
And they're stuck in what they used to do.
Oh, back in the day. It's like, I tell people all the time in training, part of the reason we don't lean on our resumes is, quite honestly, if I taught you what the Army taught me how to do, you'd be pretty fucking disappointed. I was.
Super disappointed if I taught you what the Army has taught. Well, that's not... When it comes to the shooting aspect. I was going to say, the other things that the Army has taught me, most people would be like, fucking mine grenades going off.
But if you took, let's say, a civilian UXO guy who works on a myriad of different platforms with a variety of different explosives and
in different types of environments, he would be like,
the Army is junk, right?
There's guys that I work with.
Contextually.
Yeah, yeah. There's guys that I work with that have done what we call grid work, where they're going in, they're clearing stuff, and these guys' ordnance knowledge is amazing, right? So it just adds to their ability and their knowledge base as EOD techs.
Man, that's
whereas
my point,
when EOD techs go to the grid fresh out of EOD school, our knowledge is
baseline,
limited.
Yeah,
because we're not exposed to World War II ordnance or certain types of ordnance or certain techniques that are used there that we don't use in the military aspect of it. But there's good crossover there.
But that's my point, keeping skills current.
Yeah.
So like if I am a if I'm a firearms instructor, right?
Yep.
Then I don't just want to look at my base of knowledge or my lane of experience. Like, I like when instructors quote unquote stay in their lane, but I don't like when they stay in their lane so much that they won't delve into anything else. So like the handgun and carbine, that's my lane. Like, bro, the handgun and carbine is like everyone's fucking lane. You know what I mean? And they're like, I only stay in that. I don't even mess with all this other stuff. I need long range work done, occult focused sniper. It's like, okay, check this out. What if, let's just say, you actually learned something over there that had some crossover concept? Because I'll tell you, you will. You know? So go over there and learn about that thing. And in the meantime, learn about everything you can over there. And then come back and learn how to apply it to this, and then consider all the other options. Like, okay, great, you shoot a Glock really well, you shoot this really well, you shoot that really well. Like, how many other platforms have you tried? What are the other concepts that you utilize? Are you researching and reading the old school guys as well as the new school guys? You know, are you really delving into why they're teaching what they're teaching? Like, that, to me, that's part of the mentality of like being a better shooter. You know, when I go and shoot with a guy like Nils, right? I don't go, oh, wow, Nils, you're so fast. You're a world champion shooter. You're amazing. I'll never be like you. Right? That's not the right mentality. Oh, he's so fast. Oh, man, look how fast he is. Oh, he's so good because he's got ammo sponsorship or he's got a gun sponsorship or whatever. Like, oh, he's so fast because of this. Or, look, but he gets to spend all this time in the range. If I got to spend that much time in the range, I was like, I don't make excuses for why I don't know what I know. I go like, hey, Nils, what do you do that makes you like this? Like, give me an edge. Oh, I do this when I do dry practice, or oh, I do this when I'm live firing, or this is how I view targets. You know, I'm looking at a target array. This is how I look at it. You know, this is how I perceive misses. This is how I perceive hits. This is how I track my recoil. I'm like, oh, interesting. I may be able to apply that to myself, and I may not, but it goes into the box.
Yeah.
And then later down the road, maybe I can apply it in a training setting, or I can apply it in a competition setting, or I can apply it somewhere else down the road. Because I'm kind of constantly taking in information, because I'm constantly exposing myself to different types of shit. I don't give a shit about USPSA shooting. I think it's really awesome, and the guys who do it and the gals who do it are amazing, and if I had more time, I don't know, maybe I'd get involved, but I just don't have the time or the desire right now in my life to do it. It doesn't mean I have nothing to learn from those guys. You know? So that's part of, like, shooting and mentality. The second part of that is going to be exercising your brain.
What?
Reading.
No. Yeah, I can't.
Difficult. I just want to watch TV and play video games. Reading books. Yeah, reading online blogs about relevant information that you're looking to gain, you know, get better at. Again, read those old books about those old shooters, man. Even if you're not learning about new techniques, you learn a lot about their mentality. And you learn a lot about the way that they lived their lives and about the things that they did.
And you learn how certain techniques came to be.
Mm-hmm. Learn the history of
the history of why this thing exists.
It's like when I have someone, for example, teaching, and this is just how my brain works, but it's like if I have a medic teaching me, oh yeah, T-triple-C and blah, 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 and freaking tourniquets and yada, yada, I'm like, all right, cool, man. I know all that shit. Well, can you tell me where T-triple-C came from? Do you know the history of why? Like, why is this tourniquet so important? Why is it a Gen 7? What happened to the other gens? What was wrong with them? Like, give me that kind of depth of knowledge. Do I think every medic needs that? No. But if you want to get better at medicine, stop for a second and look at the history of why you're doing what you're doing. It'll make you appreciate it. You know? It'll make you appreciate a lot. I remember the first time I ever showed my father a cat tourniquet.
Yeah.
I showed my dad a cat tourniquet and said, hey, man, check this thing out. It's pretty cool. What do you think about this, right? Because my dad, who did veterinary technician work mm-hmm. in the Army, worked for the War Dogs, went out in the field a lot with the handlers. Well, he's a dog medic, which makes him a people medic when shit goes bad and people are getting shot. So yeah. A lot of times, without being an official, you know, combat medic or anything like that, he would end up working on a lot of guys because he had supplies that were technically for the dogs. But if guys were hurt, he kind of knew how to prioritize that. Yeah. And so because of that, he ends up putting, you know, hands on a lot of people. And, of course, just being in that environment and with the unit he was with and everything, he saw a lot of shit happen. I remember showing him the cat tourniquet. And I just thought a cat tourniquet was a cool piece of equipment. You know, I didn't really totally know the history behind it. I was just like, yeah, this is cool. And I was a young man, you know. I remember my dad, like, tears coming to his eyes. And he was like, I wish we would have had something like this. You know? And that really started contextualizing, like, this is a fucking important piece of equipment here, dude. Yeah. This isn't just a thing that they gave us. This isn't just a tourniquet that, oh, you put this on to stop bleeding. Yeah, 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 yeah. But this is here because of a lot of dead guys. Mm-hmm. And it was so, like, watching that shift with my dad, I was like, wow. This thing is important.
Yeah. Tourniquets go way back, too, by the way.
They do. Oh, historically, they go yeah, way 1490 back. Something was like the first recorded history of application. That's only because that was the first time they wrote it down, I'm sure.
And if you, quick lesson.
Yeah.
If you look at Civil War, or pre-Civil War, Civil War, World War I, and World War II, if you look at some of the tourniquets that were there, and then you look at the modern tourniquets.
They're not that far off.
They're not that different.
No. Just
better materials.
Yeah.
Easier to manufacture mm-hmm. now. But they're almost identical. Yeah. You look at German World War II tourniquets. Oh, yeah, dude. It's a fucking cat. Mm-hmm. Or it's a soft T.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were basically two separate styles. That was it. They've been around forever, mm-hmm. but they fell in and out of favor
mm-hmm.
based on the cycle of war.
And politics.
And politics. Mm-hmm. They fell in and out of favor a lot.
But my point is like, that depth of knowledge on that tourniquet was, like, that really changed the way I'm like, I need to learn more about this thing.
Yeah.
I learn more about why this thing's being applied. Why do we do it this way? Why is this happening this way? You know? Why do we do it like this? Why do we do it like that? Why has it changed? Why is that important? I like to share that kind of stuff with our students. You know, a lot of times I'll break in an impromptu freaking history lessons with mm-hmm. students because understand the why. Like, dude, it's to the point where I'm like, I don't even fucking care how you do it anymore. Just understand why you're doing it.
Yeah.
Have that kind of depth of knowledge where you go, I know the exact reason why I'm doing whatever it is that I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
I know the reason I'm doing it. You know? And now I think back to that, you know, moment with my dad with that cat tourniquet where I'm like, okay, this is important. This is an important thing. This thing could have saved lives and it hasn't been saving lives. This is important, right? And every time I'd get pushback, you know, when we first started teaching this stuff early on and people didn't like it, every time we get pushback, I think back to that moment like, okay. You know, these people can push back because they're scared. They don't have the breadth and depth of knowledge. That's okay. We're going to keep pushing forward. So in addition to just shooting stuff, like if you look at emergency response skills in general, I would say in addition to dry runs and the physical fitness and the evaluation and the assessment, all that is going to be a solid evaluation. And an evaluation, to me, means a live application of what you're doing. So some people may ask, well, how do I go live application, apply, you know, my shooting skills? I can't just go shoot at people and I don't want to join the military, or I was already in the military, or, you know, I'm a cop and I can't just go around shooting people or whatever. Find opportunities every chance you can to get good evaluation back on what you're doing. So look at force on force classes. Even if you're not super into self-defense, but you're really into the shooting aspect of things, a force on force class will absolutely teach you a lot about what your shooting skills are under stress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you get your hits or not? Now, that's pretty important.
Did you get shot in the dick?
Yeah, did you get shot in the dick?
It seems to happen to me every time.
A lot.
And it's not just you, bro.
But I want to look at those kind of skill sets. I want to look at things like, you know, looking at security work, looking at fugitive recovery work, looking to, I mean, maybe if you haven't gone to law enforcement, military, maybe look at that. Look at the jobs within those worlds, in those realms, that allow you to apply your verbal skills, your physical management skills, your physical fitness skill sets, maybe a little bit of your shooting skills, your combative skills, right? Like, find opportunities to go out there and apply those things. Get into a gym and fight. Start fighting other humans. Contest yourself against other people. You want to find out where you're at with all the things we just mentioned? Put yourself in a contest with another human being.
Yeah, fight people.
Stop just using targets. Stop just using willing participants. Go to a karate dojo and I will now chop him and he will defend. Ready? Here it comes. Here's the chop I'm going to throw. Here's the defense he's going to do. I chop, he defends. Fuck that. See how fucking well it works? All right. Now you chop when that dude wants to stab you.
Yep.
You don't give a fuck about defending against your whatever. He's just going to block that shit or move past it and stab you in the belly 16 times. All right. How are you going to stop that from happening? Because you didn't think about that, because within your narrow scope of practice, you weren't doing that kind of work. The more you go out and compete against other human beings, whether it's competition shooting, whether it's in a gym, whether it's, you know, law enforcement work, whether it's security work, whatever it may be, the more you're out there competing against other human beings, trying to outthink them, trying to outsmart them, maybe outgun them, maybe outfight them, but always trying to outsmart them.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The more you're out there doing that, the sharper your mind's going to stay, the better you're going to see your weaknesses on all this other stuff. It's one of the greatest evaluations you can do is competitive, non-compliant or opponents. Any other way, John, you can think to kind of, you know, keep the skills current?
No. Like, that pretty much covered everything. Like, you have to do it, and you have to do it contextually. I think that's the biggest thing that most people lose in anything that they do. You see these discussions online and all this other crap, and it's all taken out of context because people don't understand the context. Mm. Like, before we really started this, we were talking about jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is somewhere where I can speak a little bit because I know a little bit. I don't know a lot. I know a little bit. Been at it a long time, but I still only know a little bit. Cecil, you know, former coach and professor of mine. I know you still work with him fairly closely. He's been on the show a dozen times. He still teaches. He teaches professionally. Did a really good video a week or so ago, or released a video a week or so ago, talking about street clothes and jiu-jitsu. Well, people don't understand that there's a great application there. They just assume that if you're not wearing a gi, jiu-jitsu is useless, right? It's because they've never put those techniques into context, whereas Cecil has done a very good job of contextualizing all of that and being able to apply his very good breadth and depth of knowledge in jiu-jitsu, being able to apply it across a wide spectrum of application, right? Whether it's armed, unarmed, street clothes, on the mats, you know, you have to be able to contextualize your skill sets and make sure that you're applying them properly.
It's probably one of the biggest issues I think guys have when you talk about keeping skills current, that guys have when they transition out of the military. I mean, that was kind of something we were just talking about a second ago, you know, of like, well, Army EOD tech versus a civilian EOD guy, yeah. Right? Is when people transition from the military or any job where they've learned a certain skill set in, and they try to go to any other job, they're like, shit, I'm only X, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm dealing with that right now with a person in my life, where it's like, well, I've only ever been X, and I can't be anything else. I'm like, well, that's because you're fucking stupid. You're not stupid because you don't know anything.
You're stupid because you're choosing to be stupid.
You're choosing to be stupid. You're choosing to not take what you know and contextualize it mm-hmm. into a better job.
Yep.
Contextualize what you can do. Maybe all you can do in your life is like, maybe you're really good at being on time. That's a valuable skill, man.
It's extremely valuable.
Maybe you're only good at just being incredibly reliable in doing the thing you tell people you're going to do. Maybe you're incredibly good at being tactful yet honest, right?
I'm not very good at that.
No.
Maybe you're really good at working long hours, you know? Yeah. That just doesn't bother you. You know, like you could be any normal regular person and have a normal regular job, whatever that job is to you, and you could absolutely take skill sets out of what you're doing and apply them to a new career.
Oh yeah.
And if you don't think so, that's because you're not thinking right. Right? You're not thinking about, well, how do I keep my skills current? Get your skills and make them contextual. How can I take this and apply it over to that? And a lot of times it's because people aren't keeping what they do kind of current. I mean, I hate to use the word up to date, but to keep it current.
Well, it's because that's the way we've always done things, so why do it differently?
There's
a dangerous mentality there, especially when it comes to keeping current skills. If people didn't take the opposite of that mindset, so if people didn't say, yes, I need to update this piece of knowledge, I need to update this piece of equipment, we'd still be popping holes in people's skulls because we thought they had demons.
Sure.
Right? So this is the way we've always done it. It's a very dangerous mindset to fall into when you're looking at trying to stay current in whatever it is you do. Whether you're an accountant, whether you're a body slayer in Afghanistan, whether you're just a dude that cleans people's swimming pools. Well, this is the way I've always done it. Why change? Because I'm willing to bet at some point in the amount of time that you've been doing this, there's been a new tool, a new technique, something new has happened that could help you.
And there's a dude with a YouTube video, a dude with an online article, a dude with one of the blog expos,
yeah,
a dude with something that is going to be like, dude, I do this and it cuts that cleaning time, or boom, this is how you get rid of this kind of mold, or when you're refinishing like this, you know, you can cut down 25% of your material usage if you do this. Yeah. And he could help you save money, be faster, be better. The problem with people is they don't want to do it.
Yeah, because it's not the same. It's not how I learned. It's
because we're not cavemen anymore.
You're right.
If there were saber-toothed tigers still hunting our fucking asses, people would be very different about the way they looked at their job. If you had to be the best or die, people would definitely look at being the best.
Population would be a lot smaller in general.
Part of the issue, too, is that it's really easy for people to start to just continue, not even start, but to continue to rely on other people, which is like a big-time pet peeve of mine these days, is people who are relying
just
on
these days?
Other That's people.
Always been
more, an issue. More so now than ever. People who are relying on other people to take care of them.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't take care of myself. I need someone to take care of me.
Dude, I only ever learned to do this thing.
I only ever learned to be this way. And now I can't learn. It's like, dude.
Sure you can.
How do you think everyone got to where they are? Fucking magic. Magic fairy dust.
Evolution.
Yeah.
Learning.
Yeah, and what's evolution? Mm-hmm. Learning and adapting.
Constantly molding yourself and changing to your environment.
Part of the issue is, though, because in our society there are no saber-toothed tigers hunting people down and eating them every day for being weak, we end up with a lot of weak things.
There are still saber-toothed tigers.
But not as
they're
many
just,
as we
They're need. Not as literal anymore.
Well, that, yes. Right?
Like,
yes.
For some people, the drive, right, the drive to be successful or the drive to not have a homeless family, that's the saber-toothed tiger. Right, that living in a van, that's their saber-toothed tiger. Like, I don't want to be here. Right, this is not where I want to be. This is, I am better than this. I can do better than this. I can provide better than this. So, the literal saber-toothed tiger for sure is not there anymore. But there are consequences out there. They're just less. They're lessened by the size of the system. And what the system can provide you. Right? I mean, essentially, you're looking at the Matrix. In my opinion, there are people who are living in the Matrix.
Sure.
They don't do anything. They sit, they collect, they provide nothing, and they only consume.
Right. And then they die.
And then they die.
And they offer nothing.
Because they're not afraid of the, not literal, what's the opposite? The
figurative.
Figurative.
they're not afraid of the figurative saber-toothed tiger that's right there at their door.
Yeah.
Because the system will protect them from it.
Well, it's like I look at, you know, cardiac emergencies remain the number one killer of men in the United States. Right? It's not gunfights.
No.
Right? It's not saber-toothed tigers.
And most cardiac problems, you could literally...
You could stop them from happening.
You could literally walk away from them. Literally walk away from them if you got off your ass and went outside and went for a walk.
And so here's the thing. Cardiac emergencies...
That's a real saber-toothed tiger.
Are a real saber-toothed tiger because it's something that is coming after us and killing us. We see it coming. We know it's happening. And still people are doing very little to nothing about it.
Yep.
Because... It can't happen to me.
Can't happen to me.
Nope, for sure not going to happen to me.
Or hey, if it does, I'll just handle it.
Yeah, I'll take care of it. Or I'll call somebody.
I got insurance. Someone else will take care of me. Yeah. Someone else will save me. I have insurance. A doctor will save me as you die on the table. I think here's part of the issue, too, is I think it's all about motivation and what motivates you to keep your skills current. Like you mentioned a great motivation, right? As dads, we have great motivation. Don't want your kids to be homeless on the street.
You got it, buddy.
Right? Don't want our kids to flip the fucking power switch to no fucking power.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Don't want our kids to go hungry. That's a great motivation. Not all dads have that motivation. Sad. Some don't give a fuck.
You're right.
But it all comes down to that motivation. That motivation right there has motivated me to do a lot over the years. Mm-hmm. A lot of things. And then you have to look at like a personal drive of motivation of what motivates us to keep our skills current. For some people, they have a legitimate concern, right? Like if I'm an active duty, SOCOM dude, I need to keep my skills current because they need to be up to date with the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. I need to make sure that I'm not the weak link in the chain. Mm-hmm. And my literal life may depend on whether or not I understand the skill set. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that everything that I know is going to be useful for all the rest of my life, right? No. But it does mean that within the context of this job, I need to be able to do these things. And I think personal motivation really kind of comes down to, what are you scared of about getting older? Like, what are you scared of? As life has gone on, consider all the things that scared you as you've gone older.
As a child?
I think as a kid.
I was scared of the dark for forever.
Yeah, we're scared of the dark for a while, right? Then we realize ain't nothing in the dark doesn't have a heartbeat. If it has a heartbeat, we can fucking kill it. So, okay, what's next, right? So now we're scared of, we're teenagers, we're scared of getting our heart broken, right?
Yeah.
Scared of this girl, we like her a lot. We say, I like you. She says she doesn't like you.
She says, I think you're stupid.
Your fucking heart just breaks.
Yep.
Right? Scared of a fucking broken heart, right?
Yep.
And the problem is we start to set ourselves up then for defenses against those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Right? Of the things that we're kind of
scared of. By doing things the way we've always done them.
And so then we're like, oh, shit, I don't want that to happen again. Instead of contextualizing the experience, right? Yeah. I mean, like, I would even use myself as the example, you know? Like, in my personal life, I'm like, my divorce has been such a horrible fucking experience that I'm like, I would never fucking get married again. You know what I mean? Like, that's not the right reaction to that experience.
Nope.
Right?
100% not.
But it's like the natural reaction.
It's a thing. Yeah. It's right? A real thing.
And it's the same as like, oh, man, I asked that girl out. She said, no, I'm never
going
to ask another girl out. You know what I mean? And maybe it's a year or two, and then finally you fucking make it happen or whatever. But it's like how you've done things. And what are you scared of as life goes on, right? As dads, we're scared we don't lose our jobs or we don't want to lose our ability to take care of our families or whatever, right?
Like,
we're scared
of all those things. My kids to turn out, there's like a list of three things. And as long as my kids grow up to not do these or be these three things, I'm okay with how they turn out.
Right.
There's like the real specific list. That I'm not going to get into right now, but there's a real specific list of things that I will feel successful as a father in the long run.
Right.
As long as these three things don't happen to my children.
And that's part of like, okay, so that's
kids,
a legitimate fear, right?
That's why my kids do jujitsu. That's why I take my kids out hiking. That's why I teach my kids to do things for themselves.
And so that's like that, what motivates you there is that healthy fear, right? The gift of fear kind of fear, like the Gavin DeBecker version of fear, right? That we all like, where we're like, all right, cool. Like, I'm doing this because I don't want this to happen. You know, I was, my mom and I were talking about this not too long ago and we were talking about motivation and, you know, she's getting older now, you know, she's 70 now and she's talking about, you know, what motivates her, my dad to do things, stuff like that. She was telling me, I said, what scares you, mom? Like, what scares you about getting older? You know? And she said, I don't want to lose control of myself, you know? Like, I don't ever want to not be in control of myself, whether that's physically or mentally. Mm-hmm. I don't want to lose control of myself. I want myself to always be myself. She's like, I'm happy growing old and being kind of crippled up and can't really get around as well. And I'm crazy old grandma. She's like, I'm fine with all that. I just don't want to lose control of myself. I don't want to go crazy, you know? And she's like, what scares you? And I'm like, people think I'm not dangerous. You know? Like that's what scares me. Now, dangerous in the right sense.
Right. That concept, although solid, doesn't – I don't put a lot of energy and effort into that because
– Well, I don't put any energy or effort into it. But my point is because you got to understand where I'm coming from. I'm not talking about dangerous, like, can I still kill a man? I'm not talking about that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, adventurous.
Am I still something to be exciting. Reckoned with? Am I still something to be reckoned
with? Am I still something to be reckoned with?
Right, whether right. that's a good reckoning or a bad reckoning. Is this something that if I am some type of opponent to you, do you still find me somewhat threatening? Do you
still... But see, not even just an opponent. Not even just an opponent. Like, when you read, like, Tribe, right, from yeah. Sebastian...
Which I will openly admit I have not read yet.
Oh, man,
I need to read book. It. I need
phenomenal,
to read it.
Phenomenal yeah. book.
Such a good book.
When you look at concepts like that, you know, yeah. when you read like The Way of Man by Jack Donovan, another great book, when you read those kinds of books and you look at why people are doing things, mm-hmm. one of the interesting things about like manhood that a lot of those guys talk about is wanting to be a valued member of the tribe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like everybody wants to be a valued member of the tribe. So for me, like, why do I keep my skills current? Why do I fight? Why do I fail? Why do I specifically seek opportunities to fail? I do things I know I'm not going to be good at because I want specifically...
Every day when I get out of bed.
...to fail. You know what I mean? Like, I have to fail.
Yeah.
That way, I can still get better yeah. so that I can continue to prove that I'm a valuable member of the tribe.
Right.
Right, like that's an important part. Where that comes from, that's a whole other show. All right, why I am that way, that's a whole other show.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, I never want to be thought of as not a valued member of the tribe.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think that that's like part of what motivates us. Is and there's other things that motivate me. Right, my kids motivate me. They're a huge motivator to me, but they still kind of fall under that big umbrella of
yeah.
I want them to see me.
As being valuable to them.
As being valuable to them. As being valuable to the tribe, mm-hmm. right? And so I think that that's part of like, if you want to figure out what it's going to take to make you want to keep your skills current, you got to figure out what motivates yourself. Like what actually motivates you? Everyone's going to be a little different. What motivates you? People ask us all the time, like, how do I get my wife to train? Get a new wife. Honestly, that you want to know the real, you want to know Glenn's real fucking answer? Probably get a new wife.
Yeah.
How do I get my family to understand? They're not. They're probably never going to fucking get it.
Nope.
Unless, all of those things, unless you can figure out what motivates them. Mm-hmm. And likely what motivates you is not what motivates them.
No.
So if you can't figure out what's going to motivate your significant other, to do what you want to do or to prepare like you want to prepare, if you can't figure out what motivates them to keep their skills current, then they're probably never going to give a fuck.
Yep.
It's going to be really difficult for them. And look, I'm not a psychology major. I'm sure there's some psychology major out there just shitting themselves. What? That's not how I... Well, that's why I do it. All right? Like, unless you can figure out what someone is motivated by, it's very difficult to get them to change who they are or how they are. You know? Yeah, you want your family members, your kids, your whatever, to be more motivated to do whatever it is to keep their skills more current. You got to figure out what motivates them. You got to figure out what makes them want to be. Is it fear of disappointing you? Is it fear of disappointing someone else?
That one works on my boy sometimes.
Right? Like,
I've squashed some minor issues with them with that, and I've squashed some major issues with them.
And sometimes it's necessary to kind of grab people where they're freaking motivated by and say, hey, man, this is where it's at, all right?
Yep.
And that's part of – it's why we get new students in class. It's why independence training has our people. We have our people because people have a certain fear, mm-hmm. a healthy fear, a normal fear that motivates them to want to keep their skills current.
Yeah.
whether that just happened yesterday, whether it's been happening for years. Some of these people have been on this path for a long time. Some of them just stepped onto it. Yep. Either way, there's something that motivates them. Now, everybody, if you want to get yourself truly motivated, like that's something I'm working on myself, right? I'm always happy to admit what I'm working on. You know, I am not some stalwart, fucking always moving forward kind of dude. You know, I've been set back the last year. It's kind of sucked, right? Mm-hmm. I have not grown or developed as much as I could have. I have to find new motivation now. I've found some new motivation. I need to find even additional other new motivation mm-hmm. because I need to figure out how to motivate myself to do some things that I'm not doing now because I've kind of lost some of that motivation for any number of reasons.
And that happens to everybody.
Throughout your whole life.
Yeah, and it's a constant cycle. And here's a place where this applies to me. Quite literally applies. Fitness, right? Like I have to maintain a certain level of fitness.
Yeah.
Right? Because I have certain requirements with my job and things that I do. But there are times when I'm more fit than others because sometimes fitness is a big priority and sometimes fitness is less of a priority. Right now, I'm on a fitness is a low priority because I'm going through a couple of things right now. One, there's no major PT tests or army schools and looming in my near future, right? Plus, I'm going through shoulder rehab because I have an injury. So I've slacked off on a lot of my fitness. But as soon as the shoulder's better and the doctor gives me the approval, and there's other things that I'm focusing on, right? Like I can't do full classes in jiu-jitsu. I can only go and watch technique and practice technique. I can't do live rolls anymore. But I'm still there watching other guys roll. Mm. I'm still there listening to my coaches watch other guys roll.
That's the mentality. That's the depth and breadth of knowledge thing. Maybe I can't get the practice in, but I'm still there learning.
And while I'm doing that, I'm also practicing some of those fundamentals of jiu-jitsu. My hip escapes, my upas, my certain other like just body mechanics that are very important there. So when I do go back to full rolls, there are going to be parts of my game that are way better, parts that have kind of the same, and then there's going to be stuff that I've lost. Like I know I'm going to lose mat cardio because you could go run 14 miles today at 8 minute miles. That's
mat cardio insane.
That's great.
Yeah.
Go throw on a gi, go hop on a mat, and roll around with a dude for 5 minutes while he's trying to choke the dog shit out of you.
Yeah.
Totally different cardio.
Totally different cardio. Yeah.
So I know my mat cardio is going to be lacking, but my overall cardio will be better because that's one of the things I've been focusing on.
Yeah. So a lot of it is just really finding motivation on what motivates you to do whatever it is you're trying to do to keep your skills current.
Yeah.
For whatever reason that is. And everyone's reason is going to be intensely personal, right? And that's going to change as time goes on. And you have to recognize when it changes so you can keep yourself motivated. And if you start to lose motivation,
or why
you got to figure out that. Or why it's changed. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes that's important too.
The why is usually a big one. The why is huge. People have to understand their why.
So whatever motivates you, we'd be kind of interested to hear about it. If you're willing to share it, send us a message, info@trainingaz.com. Drop it on our Instagram inbox or hit us on Facebook and on the Arms Room Show. Let us know, like, what motivates you. And it'd be interesting to hear what some of you guys have to say. All right. Remember, you can always bring us out to train with you. Email us, info@trainingaz.com. We're happy to give you information on how we can come out to train in your neck of the woods. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group, so be sure that you check out the network and see all the other shows that are available, especially during the holiday season. There's always like an overabundance of extra shows for some reason, but a lot of good stuff going on there. Next week, we're going to have a guest on the show. Neil is going to be in the studio live with us, talking to us about lessons learned fighting with foreign freedom fighters, specifically the Kurdish Peshmerga. Mm. So really interesting to going to be able to talk to Neil next week. You guys know how it is. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.